Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, I am hanging in there. We have reached the long off-season point from, like, you know, release of the magazine to media days to the release of the video game, but not a slow time in the world of college football, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And again, here's mine right here, Stephen. But for mine, the Cousins, where they can get their own Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine if they haven't already.
Mike, I think the best place to get it is athlonsports.com. If you go to our site at the very top, there is a link for magazines. Click on that. It takes you to our store. We've got two SEC covers. If you want an ACC cover with Bill Belichick on the cover, we got that too. But if you don't want to order online, it looks like the best place to get it right now is bookstores or Publix. I know I found one at Publix. I know some others have found it there as well. So it is on bookstores, grocery stores, newsstands nationwide right now.
Yeah, and shout out Stephen. Cousin Morgan says, breaking news, Arch just won the Nobel Peace Prize. Cousin Hookem 361 says, Stephen's on the phone with Cousin Arch talking about what they're going to do after Texas wins a natty. Again, Stephen's, that's his prediction, Texas winning the national championship. So go out, support the magazine, support Stephen. Go buy you an Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. So again, Stephen came up with a one heck of a show topic that we did this last year. We had a ton of fun. The make or break position group for each and every SEC team that'll make the 2025 season. And we steered away from quarterbacks, because that's kind of an obvious one, right? So, you know, if you have Joe Burrow back here, Cam Newton, you know, legendary quarterbacks like that, yeah, you're going to have one heck of a year. But if you go sideways with that, you're obviously not. So we're looking beyond the quarterback position, because we know how obvious that is. But, you know, I think we'll hit on a number of different position groups for each team. And Steven hasn't seen my list. I haven't seen his. But we're just fingers crossed that we don't just say this, the offensive, defensive line for everybody. You know what?
You know what's interesting, Mike, is going through these teams. And I wanted to stay away from quarterbacks, because like they are the obvious position, but also I just think like you can start going down the list of contenders this year, and it's a great year for quarterbacks in the SEC. But it's kind of obvious, like we know Alabama's biggest thing come into the season is quarterback. So like, what are some of the other positions I think which are really interesting? But I thought as I was doing this list, I went offensive line. So I don't know how you feel about this, but I did feel that offensive line was kind of a theme for this conference. Like maybe that's the case every year, but it does feel like some of the contenders with like Georgia replacing four starters, Texas is replacing four starters, LSU is as well. It just feels like offensive line is almost one you could pencil in for every major contender in the conference. Would you agree?
I would agree, Steven, and I forgot to mention, no, we're not talking coaching, as Liquid says, big Florida guys, coaching position group, asking for Gator fans. We are not including coaching, although we certainly could for a number of these teams, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could. That's another thing, too. I guess offensive line, hot seat coaches, coordinator questions across the league. So, but I do think that, like, it's good to steer away from quarterbacks almost just to get some different stuff. Like, everybody's talking quarterbacks in the offseason. Let's talk some of these other positions and get some shine or questionable areas for some of these teams.
Yeah, and speaking of coaching, big news here. I wanted to get Steven's instant reaction here. I did an emergency pod real quick. I drank some bourbon for old Mark Stoops, because I think it was the beginning of the end. You know, I hate to say it for old Stoops. I kind of already had him 1 foot out the door. But Steven, in case anybody missed it, they could go back and watch the instant recap, the emergency show after this. But Vince Morrow, associate head coach, tight ends coach, recruiting coordinator, he's got every title you could possibly have for Kentucky, has jumped ship. And not only has he jumped ship, Steven, he's jumped ship to the most hated team in the state, if you're a Kentucky fan, and that's Louisville, so he's going to be the GM. He's not taking an on-the-field position. And I hear, Stephen, that he had some kind of clause in his contract where if he left for another assistant coaching responsibility, he'd have a massive buyout. So this is obviously not a position group. This is a GM role at Louisville. What's your thoughts on Mark Stoops losing the guy that's been with him since day one and has been the primary recruiter on so many of these unsung heroes that Kentucky has had over the years, like a Benny Snell, like a Lynn Bowden, like a Darian Kennard? I mean, so many great players that Kentucky has had over the years that were largely there because of Vince Morrow. What's your thoughts on him jumping ship?
Mike, I had to, when I first saw that, I actually had to check and make sure that was real, like a double and triple check, because it's pretty shocking to see. We've seen coaches like go from one rival to the next, and it usually happens much earlier in the offseason. But to go from, you know, Kentucky to Louisville in the offseason, to not take an on-field role, to taking off the field position, I think it spells a lot of trouble here for Kentucky now and Mark Stoops. Now, it's shocking. You can also isolate this and say, well, they still have to play the season. Mark Stoops could be fine here. But to lose your top lieutenant and ace recruiter and someone who's so valuable to the program, and also somebody who's kind of been your right-hand man in charge of the program, I think it's maybe like a leading indicator of kind of where things are, and just another sign of concern. Not only is the on-field stuff a concern, you now have some major question marks on the coaching staff. If coaches are fleeing, I don't think that says a lot of good things about where this program is right now, unfortunately. Is that fair?
No, I think it's 100% fair. And I was going to ask you, Stephen, if let's say 0% chance Mark Stoops returns to 100, where were you before this Vince Morrow news? And where are you after this Vince Morrow news?
I was probably maybe over 50%, like close to 60, almost just because of the buyout. And his contract was pretty, favorable, I guess, to Mark Stoops. I would probably lower that percentage a little bit, like maybe under 50%. Maybe you go like 45%. I just think like some of these dominoes, it's not necessarily an assistant coach leaving, but I think you're seeing some dominoes stack up here, like the schedule, the question marks, the urgency with all the transfers coming in. There's just a ton of question marks about this team. So it's not necessarily the coach leaving, but I think it's just kind of, it's one more factor we're going to add to the pile of question marks about Kentucky this season.
Mm-hmm. And the buyout is around $44 million. That's why he's still there, in my opinion. Otherwise, he'd be gone. Oh, man. And one other thing, Stephen, before we get to make or break positions. This sums up this show perfectly. I spoke to Stephen this morning. He said, yeah, I'm going to have a bold prediction for you as well. And I said, well, hell, Shane and I didn't even do it last episode. Like we went 1 week, we forgot we were doing that. So we apologize. But Stephen, he's the encyclopedia. Do you have a bold prediction for us?
I do, Mike. This one's, I don't know how bold this one is, like on the scale of like hot sauces or something. It might be a little mild, but I think Alabama, they were eighth in the conference last year in passing yards a game. I am going to guess they finish as a top 25 passing offense nationally. They were 56 nationally in production, and I'm going to go top five passing offense in the SEC. It's maybe like it's mild because they have a new quarterback, but I'm going to bank on Ty Simpson or someone else really thriving in this passing game more than Jalen Milroe did.
Yeah, and then, again, that's a prediction. But if we were to know that would happen for Alabama, they had a top five passing attack in the SEC when everybody and their mother, that's all they do. If they're going to doubt Alabama at this point in time is, well, they don't have a quarterback. Who's going to be throwing the ball? I would be feeling pretty dang confident given what they've got coming back on the defensive side of the football and the overall talent that, if we have a top five passing attack in the SEC, this is likely a playoff team.
I agree with you. And one thing I've started to think about a little bit more as we're now like removed from the magazine production is, looking at some of these odds and win totals, and it really feels like the top of the SEC. I know we consider it to be Texas and Georgia, but I have wondered, how much more should we consider Alabama and LSU in that tier? And I guess I keep coming back to, it really feels close between those top four. And I don't think we should write off Alabama at all. I know I'm not, no, you're not, certainly some others are not. But I think if you're giving Alabama a top five passing game, you're talking about a team that can go 11 wins, make the SEC championship, and go far in the college football playoff. So I know it's not super, super duper bold, given that Kalen DeBoer is known for offense, but I'm going to go in on the passing game improving despite losing a NFL draft pick at quarterback.
All right, Steven, we've delayed long enough. The position group for each and every team that's going to make or break 2025. And if anybody wants to throw us a donation, we'll throw your team immediately to the top of the list and maybe go a little bit longer on them. But of course, that's totally optional. No one has to give anything. We'll still get to your team. So anywhere that you'd like to start, Steven?
How about we start with Florida? I think they're one of those tier two contenders, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. So Florida, Steven, where would you go as a position group for the Gators that will make or break Billy Napier this year?
Mike, I tried to choose some different positions here because, you know, we'll get into some, we talked a little bit about the offensive line, but I'm going to focus on the cornerbacks for Florida. And you may think that's crazy, but I want to point you to the early part of Florida's schedule where they are going to play Byron Brown from South Florida. They're going to play Garrett Nussmeier of LSU, Carson Beck of Miami, and they're also going to play Arch Manning, all in the first, like, you know, five games of the season. I bring this up because they lose two corners last year who essentially were their starters, Bridges and Jason Marshall. Devin Moore, you know, he's going to step into a bigger role. He's been banged up a lot during his career. Deshaun Johnson, been a little bit of legal trouble. And Thurman Kermani McClain, too, like his development in another year in the program. This feels like a really talented group. But also when you're looking at that schedule and going, man, those are some of the top quarterbacks potentially in the country. I like their front to improve, but if this secondary with some new pieces are trying to figure it out, do they pick up where they left off with those quarterbacks early in the season? We're talking playoff hopes here, but they could really fade really quick if you lose to Nussmeier, Carson Beck, and Arch Manning in the month of September, end of October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, apologies for any cousins that are late, because I'm seeing it over in the comments, Stephen. We're not counting quarterbacks. So I said that at the top, just because that's just such an obvious one. And if you have a great quarterback, you're likely going to have a great season. If you have a poor quarterback, or at least poor quarterback performance, you're going to obviously have a very difficult year. So this is outside the quarterback position. But I love that selection by you, Stephen. And but I'm going completely different than you. Come on, I'm going receivers. And again, I'm a big believer in DJ Lagway. I think anybody that says he may be the top quarterback in the SEC, I have no argument for that. He's either one or two for me. So I think he is good enough. We just had an interview with Will Miles from Read and Reaction. He's got Lagway as number one quarterback, and he likes to cite yards per pass attempt, which for Lagway was well over 10. Which is pretty outstanding, particularly he was a true freshman. He was banged up, and this is his first time playing college football, and to come in with that level of production is amazing. So I think Lagway can certainly make receivers look a little bit better than they are. I mean, you know, just some gifted quarterbacks can really do that. But again, we are trying to be potentially playoff bound, right? I mean, 7 wins last year was a Billy Napier record down here in Gainesville. You said it yourself, Steven, with this schedule, they're facing all these great quarterbacks potentially, like a Nussmeier, like a Carson Beck, if he is great. Well, he's our punching bag now, so we can't say that. Arch Manning and Austin Simmons and maybe Marcel Reed, on and on and on. I think Florida's going to have to score a lot of points this year if they're going to have a really outstanding season. And I know Billy Napier loves to run the football, but I'm going to need to, you know, to see them throw it and particularly push it down the field. And I know they got the transfer they're very excited about, but sometimes those transfers can be real hit or miss. I know they got the 5-star freshman, Dallas Wilson, that everybody is enamored with. I think he had like 36 catches in the spring game and 900 yards, something insane like that. I kid, of course, but
not a good sign for the cornerbacks. That's okay.
So again, they got the pieces, but how many times have we went into a season, Steve, where they say, oh, we're good there. We got this transfer. We got this freshman. We're golden. And then we get to the fall and the pieces don't mesh. So I think receiver is a critical position. I don't think they have a single receiver returning that caught more than 20 passes last year. So again, that doesn't mean that they're awful, but to get where they want to go, I think the receiver play is going to have to significantly step up for the Gators.
Mike, I like that call because it's kind of like the end of the season for Florida. You can read into what you want with that sample size, you know, at the end of the season, how fast they finish the year. You can look at it and say they turned a corner. You can also look at it and say, well, it's just too small of a sample size. There's still too many questions here. When you look at that receiving core, Eugene Wilson, if he can stay healthy, he's got potential to have kind of a first team all SEC kind of season. You mentioned Dallas Wilson, J. Michael Sturdivant, a lot of potential, but how fast or how long does it take for them to get acclimated, especially with DJ Lagwe banged up in the spring? And I think we have to assume that he'll still be, or I would assume he's probably going to practice in a fuller capacity in the fall, but they're still trying to figure this out. And so how long does it take all these pieces to come together? I think you can see where they want to go with this, but does it come together in game two, or is it going to take the middle of the season? So I think there are questions here, but also I think there's also that optimism or potential that you can read into.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out to the legend, Cousin Rick. Steven, he gave us $20, and what a guy Rick is. He's an Aggie, Steven, but he says, no, he's donating for Cousin Sven. So he wants Mississippi State for Cousin Rick. We appreciate you, buddy. What a guy you are. Let's do Mississippi State. And then after that, we're going to do A&M just for Cousin Rick. He gets a twofer. She's being such an outstanding guy. But where would you go? Mississippi State, the position group that'll make or break the Bulldogs in 2025.
Mike, I'm going on defense, and I'm going to take the defensive line. The numbers last year for this defense, just staggeringly bad. I mean, 220 rushing yards a game in SEC play, over 5 yards per carry allowed. That was worst among power conference teams. You could also look at the sack totals, like 10 sacks. Everything to me plays off of this for Mississippi State, you know, with the question marks they have in the secondary. Can you stop the run better? Can you get after the quarterback? Can you create some disruption? They've imported a ton of players here, like over 5 transfers to start up front, depending on how you want to classify them as linemen or edges or linebacker. It feels like the quantity should improve this group. And so that just automatically gives you a fighting chance here to be better on defense. You know, you look early in the season, Tennessee was great at running the ball. They're going to play Texas A&M, Florida, Texas midway through the season. Those are big time rushing attacks. So we'll find out when they play Arizona State in week 2, how far this defense has progressed. But I just think being a line of scrimmage league in the SEC, given the transfers, the urgency to improve on defense, for me, it's defensive line getting a little bit better there or significantly better this season.
Yeah, Steven, this is why I like to call you a genius, because you're absolutely right. You nailed it. It's got to be defensive line with just how pathetic they were defending the run last fall. And man, you just don't have a chance in this conference if you can't stop the run. And I know people like to pick on secondaries. I'd rather have a awful secondary and a good run defense, because at least that gives you a fighter's a puncher's chance, because a quarterback could be off, tips, things of that nature, receiver could drop the ball. But if you can't stop a nosebleed, it's just going to continue on and on and on. And that's what it was for Mississippi State last year. It's got to be the defensive line. It was one of the softest defensive lines I can ever recall in this conference. And man, if this continues, then the whole staff is on borrowed time. So, that was one thing I loved under Dan Mullen, was they always had a tough physical team that they were not always the most talented, but they always fought hard and they'd beat you and batter you. So that's been missing. And quite frankly, it's been missing for far too long. down in Starkville. So it's got to start up front. I don't think there's any other answer than defensive line here.
Did you consider offensive line at all?
Well, yes. I mean, you make the case for it for sure. But I think with this offensive system, we've seen it with Heupel. We've seen it with Kiffin. We've seen it with even Jeff Lebby, I would say, at Oklahoma, where I think you can manufacture offense even with a not far from an elite offensive line. Now, you know, Tennessee was at its best when they had Darnell Wright, top 10 pick in the NFL draft. So certainly those elite players will help. But all their offensive linemen that are gone this year, none of those guys got drafted, I don't believe, from Tennessee. So, and I don't think, I'm racking my brain here, I don't think Ole Miss has had, they may have had one offensive lineman drafted the last couple of years. But you know, point being, you can work around it. And I know that was a huge issue for Mississippi State. But I don't think you can work around a subpar defensive line. I really don't think.
I think we have to trust Lebby to figure some things out offensively. It may not be 34 points a game, but they averaged 21 last year in SEC play. I would imagine that total goes up, especially if Blake Shapen is healthy for the full season. So I think if you just think about small improvement offensively to have a chance in some of these SEC games where the scores were pretty one-sided last year, if you can get a couple more stops, maybe you get a takeaway, you create a little more havoc, you know, all of a sudden maybe you can pull off one of these upsets in SEC play and try to make a push for bowl eligibility. So I the reason why I kind of went with defensive line is almost what you were getting at, which is I'm just trusting Lebby to manufacture some offense. But I think in order for Mississippi State to kind of close that gap from being this far wide to bowl team is to this, is that they've got to just be better on defense, and it starts up front.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about Texas A&M, Stephen, for old cousin Rick here for his donation. What's the position group that'll make or break A&M? And remember, we're not doing quarterback for the cousins out there. So, you know, a lot of people will say Marcel Reed, but I think we'll have a couple different answers here. Where are you going, Stephen?
Mike, there were three positions that I considered here, but I kept coming back to one, and that's receivers. And I think that kind of gets at Marcel Reed. It's just, it's hard to evaluate a quarterback in injuries at, you know, to the starter. There's a new system. There's question marks at receiver. But now it feels like this is a pretty fair opportunity to evaluate Marcel Reed. When you go out and you get Kevin Concepcion, you get Mario Craver, Terry Bussey could be a breakout candidate. Their receivers feel they have some playmaking ability this year with those guys. So I think how those receivers mesh with Marcel Reed is going to be a pretty interesting storyline. When you look at just big plays in the conference, Texas A&M had 7 completions of 40-plus yards, and Auburn had 17. So you've got to find a way to get some more big playability, because I think they're going to be able to run it. They're going to be able to – they got a good offensive line. There's some questions on defense here, but if you can get a few more big plays in the passing game, this A&M team is going to be way more dangerous than finishing like 20th or so, as maybe some people are predicting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steven, I told you Cousin Rick was a great guy. He just gave us $100, Steven. Wow. Cousin Rick, what a legend you are. 12th man, best grouping, receiver room, most impactful position group on the number one scoring offense, says Cousin Rick. We appreciate you, buddy. So
appreciate you, Rick.
I was right there with you, Steven. I was considering receivers because of they've totally revamp that room, and hopefully it'll show itself on the field this year. But for me, I'm going defensive backs, because that was the one I can't get it out of my head, Steven. This Southern Cal loss, when Mike Elko come out here in the post game, and it was the most fired up I ever seen him. And you know, he just said things are changing. Defense, this has got to stop. We're getting over the top. We're getting destroyed. And same thing against Auburn. That's how Auburn jumped out to a 21, I believe it was, 21-0 point lead, and nearly gave that away. But they didn't, because they got out to that great start. South Carolina, you know, a little bit different story. They kind of outmanned them, and there was the pick six and all that. But I think Mike Elko was embarrassed with the secondary, as he should have been. I think he's taken a much larger control of the defense, specifically to resolve the issues in the secondary. And for all the Aggies out there, I hope that was the worst defense we see under the Mike Elko era, because, man, I thought it would be, you know, you can't just come in there and snap your fingers and it's one of the best units in the country. But I thought we'd get much closer to that, because it was that his first go around. And I think they'll take a big jump this year. We just can't have these major, major issues. And that's another position group where they brought in a lot of talent to try to resolve it. I think that it could be a strong point, whereas last year it was a big weakness down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to think about Texas A&M's defense because of the turnover up front and the question marks in the secondary, and they're kind of correlated almost. How do you replace a Nick Scorton, Shamar Turner, and Shamar Stewart? I know, you know, there's some optimism about Cassius Howell and some of the other guys they brought in through the portal, but you can protect your secondary if you can get after the quarterback. And so it'll be interesting to see how they develop up front. Now, the other side of this is, what if the secondary just really is better and it takes the front some time to settle in? When you think about also like what happened last year, like Tyreek Chapel getting hurt early in the season, I think Mike Elko has said that kind of altered the way they were going to play defense and played a large role in their secondary. So I think getting him back and another year in the scheme will really help. And also, I think Mike Elko's post-game blistering what happened in Vegas didn't stay in Vegas. I think he will be focused on fixing that group. And I think you have to, they will get attested by UTSA in week one. UTSA's got a good passing game. But like Notre Dame, Auburn, Mississippi State, you get those teams before you play Florida and LSU. So they got some time to kind of ramp up things on defense before they hit the heart of SEC play.
Hey, and then we had another outstanding donation from the Bengals, Stephen. Bama at Mizzou. Maybe the first game in Como with a fully enclosed stadium, enclosed by October, supposedly, may completely change the decibel levels. Count it as a Bama loss already. M-I-Z, we appreciate you, Bengal. Thank you so much for the donation. So for the Bengals, Stephen, we're going to do Missouri next, of course. What is your biggest position group for the Missouri Tigers this fall?
Mike, I get to nerd out because I love talking offensive line. So we're going to go right to the heart of the trenches and talk about that offensive line for Missouri. Really interested to see how this group looks in the fall. Caden Green, Connor Tolleson, that's a pretty solid interior. You know, Connor Tolleson is coming back from a torn ACL, suffered in November. So his recovery is going to be crucial here. But last year, Missouri only averaged 3.7 yards per carry in SEC games. They're counting on transfers, probably at both tackle spots right now, to fill in some voids. So three new starters, a group that statistically wasn't great last year at opening up holes in SEC play. And I think about like first-time quarterback with Prabula or Sam Horn. Not only is it protection, but can you give your quarterback protection in the offense with a good running game? You know, that's a lot of pressure on a first-time quarterback. You know, looking at that Alabama game on October 11th, you know, South Carolina, September 20th, this offensive line is going to face some good defensive fronts early in the season. So how far does it progress? Can they run the ball effectively, take the pressure off the quarterbacks? And then does the quarterbacks have time to throw in the SEC? So pretty basic line of scrimmage. It's a trenches league. Give me the offensive line for Missouri.
Yeah, I certainly considered offensive line. You could go that way with a lot of these teams. And maybe that's why I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I just thought I'd be a little bit different. Obviously, quarterback, if we were doing that, it would be the easy answer. But again, we're not doing quarterbacks. How about this, Steven? Am I crazy for saying receivers, where obviously, I think we overhyped Luther Burden. I still love the guy, but didn't quite live up to the massive hype I was giving him last year. And I thought Theo Weiss was awesome, but now he's gone as well. So now we're bringing in Kevin Coleman, who, you know, by all accounts could be one of the better receivers in the SEC this offseason. But how does he fit into this offense? I think they're, you know, whoever the quarterback is, and we assume it'll be Prabula, but he's going to need some help. And Ahmad Hardy can't do it all himself. You know, transferring up from, what was it, ULM. So I really need to see the receivers, because I think they make this offense go with all the shifts and the motion and all the things that, that Coach Drink and Coach Kirby Moore ask of them to do in this offense. If they don't have one of the better receiving groups in the SEC, I think they might be in trouble offensively. How does that sound?
That's a good call. I think it's always dangerous to assume that just because, like, Kevin Coleman coming in and also Marquise Johnson, who had the huge performance in the bowl game, that it will be a smooth transition. It may take some time for this group to gel around Prabula. And you add in the Ahmad Hardy, like, at running back, transferring up. Like, how does he play in the SEC after being in the Sun Belt? So I think back to last season, too, and I'm trying to figure this out in my mind. Missouri came into the season with so much promise offensively and really underperformed, and they kind of got it going later in the year. So it's like, well, how much of that was like injuries, and how much of that was just maybe Kirby Moore needing to adjust better in his second season? So I think that's something to watch here too, is third year of this offense, new receivers, how do they all fit into place? I like the potential of Kevin Coleman and Marquise Johnson, but that's a lot of potential and not a lot of for sure is there. So I like the call there, trying to surround the young quarterbacks with support.
And really, I know there's no way to answer this question accurately, because there's so many unknowns and we're so far away from it. But if you had to guess, Stephen, just knowing what you know, we're not allowed to talk about this team, but Kansas, when they come to town, how many points is it going to take, if you just had to guess, for Missouri to walk out September 6th with a win over Kansas? Because I would imagine, again, you know a lot more about Kansas than I do. I don't want to know anything about them, Stephen. I just have you on here because of your expertise. But I would imagine it's not going to be a, you know, you're probably not going to win that game if you're scoring less than 14 points. You know, like, it's not going to be a defensive, even Missouri may shut them out, but I mean, I think it's going to cut. You're going to need to be able to score some points on Kansas.
Definitely. I won't give you a full breakdown of Kansas. We can save that for September, but they've got a good quarterback. And I think that is a quarterback that is dangerous on the ground and through the air. And so I think, to your point, if you're Missouri, I don't think you could feel good like under 20. Like, I think you probably want to hit like 24, 27. And also full credit to Missouri's defense too. I think they got potential to be really solid here, but a Kansas team that averaged almost 30 points a game last year, I think I would probably feel better if I was Missouri to get to like 27 or so.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And I don't know if you're going to get there if the receivers are not clicking, and I'm not doubting that they will, but again, that's early in the season. We're going to need some offense, because we gotta whoop Kansas. Otherwise we'll never live that down. You know what?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's great that game is back, isn't it? I mean, these early season rivalry games or end of season, like, it's, you know, I'm a sucker for these. So I am ready for Kansas and Missouri to reignite the rivalry.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Stephen, we got another donation. Thank you so much, Cousin Brandon. He gave us $2. No donations too small for us. We're $2 richer is how I look at it. My bad for being late. Yeah, that's okay, Cousin Brandon. Go Rebs, he says. So for Cousin Brandon, let's focus on the Ole Miss Rebels, Stephen. Position group that'll make or break Ole Miss.
Mike, I could have went a number of directions with this, but I actually picked a position that we haven't talked about a ton this offseason, and that's the running backs. You know, when you look at this Ole Miss team, I think offensive line is probably the biggest question mark offensively. A ton of new faces too. But the collection of running backs is pretty interesting. You know, it's Logan Diggs coming back from an injury. You also have Kawan Lacy, and you also have Damian Taylor from Troy, who ran for over 1,000 yards last year. I like the potential for this group. And, you know, you think back to last season, the short yardage using J.J. Pegues. When they need a yard or two, do they have a guy who can get that? But also, what happens if the offensive line really struggles early in the year? You're adding a lot of pressure on Austin Simmons. But not only that, could you get one of these running backs to make something out of nothing? Is one of these running backs going to be a playmaker? And as much as Lane Kiffin gets credit for developing quarterbacks, and high-powered offenses. You think back to even when he was at Florida Atlantic and they had Devin Singletary. They've had Quinshon Judkins. Like, he finds ways to get production out of his running back. So I'm just fascinated by this group and trying to see where this goes. After last year, they averaged under 4 yards per carry and could really use probably some more big playability in SEC play.
Yeah, I think so. And if you saw this, Steven, again, Ole Miss dead last in a lot of returning production, rushing just 11. Now, again, with this offensive system, with Lane Kiffin calling it, I'm not thinking that they're just going to fall off a cliff. I think they'll still be among the elite in running the football in the SEC, but even lower than that 11% returning, Steven, and then this one. And I got a lot of faith in Pete Golding. I don't know if you saw it. We'd go back and check it out. Anybody that missed it, the play caller rankings we did on the last episode, I believe I had Pete Golding as the number 4 defensive play caller in the SEC. I think he's doing a masterful job in Oxford. But they return only 6%, 6.4 to be exact, 6.4% of the defensive back snaps from last season are back, Steven. That is absolutely the lowest number in the conference at any position other than there's a couple of teams that return 0% of the passing yards, but that's quarterbacks just seemingly half of them jumping the portal these days. But beyond that, I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? Where you have such a good defense, only bringing back 6.4% of the defensive back snaps. And I know they hit the portal like crazy down there. So I'm not saying they're devoid of talent, but that is a huge, huge question mark after losing some elite defensive linemen, a touted linebacker. Man, I think Ole Miss, it's only natural to expect them to take a slight step back, and it may be more than slight, on the defensive side of the ball. Is that fair?
That's 100% fair, Mike. I was just looking at some of my position grades after spring practice, and I think offensive line, running backs, and secondary were the three lowest groups that I have for Ole Miss right now. And the growth of this defense under Pete Golding and just the improvement, but also the sheer volume, like you said, of guys they are losing. And not only that, you're taking away some of your top defensive linemen too. And I know, like you said, they've added through the portal. So it's kind of that case thing. It's like these two things are connected. Early in the season, they're going to play Taylen Green. They're going to play a pretty good Tulane offense, LSU. So I do think, exiting spring, it felt like the biggest question for Ole Miss was still how those pieces fit in the secondary, and something that I think we'll have to watch in the fall to see how this group is coming together.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of something to watch, Steven, I didn't forget about you. Horton hears you. See what I did with speaking ears. Horton hears you. He's back. He's gifted a membership. We even got a sound effect for old Horton. What a guy he is.
Well, apparently, Horton couldn't hear you, so he's gifting you a membership.
And this time, it's Travis 772. You have been blessed by Horton. Couldn't hear you. Travis, welcome to the family. We appreciate you, Horton. And Horton is...
Welcome to the family.
A big Longhorn, Steven. So let's do Texas next. What is the position group? And my goodness, Steven, do they... I mean, I don't even know if they have according to Steven, they've got no issues. This is the team of the century here. But if... You know, this probably was the toughest one for you, Steven, to have to actually pick apart one... Maybe a question mark for old Texas Longhorns. Where would you go?
I think in general, I think if you have to kind of pick something, it's probably the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Just given some of the turnover, there's a lot of potential. So I will focus on the offensive line. And it really goes back to kind of the way the schedule breaks. First game of the season at Ohio State on the road. Ohio State does have some turnover there. But how do you protect Arch Manning in a very difficult spot? You play Florida in October 4th, much improved defense. Oklahoma's defensive front, I'm pretty high on as well. So those three tests early in the season, 4 new starters. I think you feel good about Trevor Goosby, the way he developed. You throw in Brandon Baker at right tackle, to go with DJ Campbell and Cole Hudson on the interior. They've got the makings of a really solid offensive line, and I trust Kyle Flood. He's one of the better offensive line coaches in the country. But also, I just think in order for Texas to win the national title, this group is going to have to be really solid, like all the season, and protect Arch Manning. So I went with offensive line, but I also could have talked myself into how the defensive line reloads too.
Yes, you nailed it, Steven, right there. I went defensive line. Now, they've attacked that via the transfer portal. They got some young players they really like, and they got one of, if not the best, defensive line prospects out of high school to come in. But I think where they want to get, again, if this is nearly anybody else, I don't think this is that big of a question mark, but Texas trying to win the national championship, trying to win the SEC championship, and they came up short because I think in the games that really mattered, I think, again, they were not like totally outclassed or anything. I mean, we're talking Georgia was close, particularly the second one. And I know Ohio State final score two possessions, but they were down there near the goal line to punch it in to tie the game, right? So, again, it's not like they were getting whooped out there. But to take that next step, you got to be a little bit more dominant, really on both lines of scrimmage, but particularly, I think, on the defensive line. And I was watching a good film breakdown from, I think it was maybe Inside Texas or somebody. I think the guy's name is Ian Boyd. I don't know. Does that sound right?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. He does a heck of a job. And he was kind of breaking down just Texas and their defensive linemen and the ones that are gone and who's got to step up. And again, they got talent. They got a five-star coming in. They got a kid that shined in the Ohio State game, but they ask a lot of those defensive linemen. And can they come in and replace NFL players? I don't know. I think that is a question mark, a slight question mark. And again, it's just, I'm not saying, you know, are they going to win eight games? I mean, if they don't have it, no. But I'm trying to look at Texas like Steven is. How do they get to the national championship? I think they got to be a little bit more productive on the defensive line, and particularly with guys that were not on the roster last year, which is always, I think, a little bit more of a challenging ask than a guy that has been in the system, and this is year two, year three, or what have you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think the quantity of defensive linemen they brought into the portal there, and we saw this in the first and second window, was really about like one thing, like bulk, size, depth to stop the run, especially on the interior. And I think Ohio State in that first game, I'm sure they're going to, I mean, first-time starter and Julian Sayin, I'm sure they're probably going to come out and try to test this Texas defensive front. I think with both fronts here, whether it's offensive line, you know, and on the offensive line too, you think back to last season, like that game against Ohio State, like Jack Sawyer, I mean, blowing up the play and returning a touchdown. You think Georgia, how much havoc Georgia caused in those games. It feels like the conversation here is if those two groups are good enough, they win the national title. If they're just worse than that last year, they're probably getting bounced in the quarters or semis. And I think that's kind of the conversation, is like the ceiling for this team is going to be determined on those two groups and how far they come this year.
Yeah. And one of the cousins said, Ian is, he's the Steven Lassen of that channel. So there you go, Steven. Mm-hmm. You're in good company there. All right. Hey, we got another donation this time. Steven Up. What a guy. Steven Up. He's back. He's gifted a membership. This time, Steven, he has given to Michael Dooley. Welcome to the family. Hopefully you're not related to Derek. Because you're not welcome, if that's the case.
Welcome to the family.
But I kid. All right, Steven Up, he's a huge Bammer. So let's do Alabama. Steven, what is the position group that'll make or break the tide?
Mike, you might laugh at me, but I almost went with kicker and punter because they lose both their kicker and punter. But I decided to pick an on-field position, and I went with edge rusher. Not a ton of questions on both sides of the ball, obviously quarterback being the biggest, but they had 25 sacks last year. Sacks aren't necessarily the greatest indicator of pass rush. You can have a good pass rush and not accumulate a lot of sacks, but they lost, you know, Jihad Campbell, They lost Robinson. The two main sack producers are gone. LT Overton could probably convert some pressures to sacks, and that helps out. Quay Rousseau is back. I expect him to kind of slide into that role. So, you know, how do they maybe generate some pressure off the edge from the linebacker spot in this scheme? That's what I'm watching here. It's kind of a specific thing. I think I feel really good about Alabama across the board, but in order to make this defense even better, I would like to see somebody maybe from that edge spot emerge as a difference maker.
Yeah, that's certainly what I considered, Steven, but call me crazy. I'm pulling a Steven Lassen. I'm saying the offensive line. I think their offensive line, again, where they want to get, right, is different at Alabama than it is most places. They're trying to win it all. And I know they got the Caden Proctor, five-star left tackle. I don't honestly think he's ever lived up to that potential. And he's been injury-prone. And again, a lot of that's probably not even his fault. And he's I don't know why, but I guess it was because Saban, so that makes sense. But remember, he went to Iowa, and then he came back. He missed all of spring. I think he missed all this spring, too. So I think there's issues with getting developed. And again, I say all that to say he's probably, you know, maybe the most gifted left tackle prospect in the conference. So I'm not saying he's horrible, but he's got to take his game to another level. I thought Parker Brailsford came with all this hype. I didn't think he was awful, but I didn't think he was what he was cracked up to be. Now he's back for another year, so maybe he will be this year. They're bringing back over 65% of their offensive line snaps from last year, so this should be a solid unit, but I'm not convinced of it in terms of, again, trying to win a national championship. This is my pick to win the conference. This offensive line's got to take their game to another level if they're going to reach that potential. What's your thoughts on the offensive line?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty high on this group, but it comes back to potential. And I think also, as you mentioned with Caden Proctor, a lot of that is potential, because I think I voted him, I think, either first or second team All-American this year, but largely just based upon where he could play. Also, Alabama seemed like they had some issues on the right side of the offensive line last season, too. So I think if you just kind of put all these pieces together, whether it's Roberts or Brailsford or Proctor, I like the potential of this group. Now, how does it come together? And is it also, maybe it's just different operating with Ty Simpson at quarterback than Jalen Milrow? Maybe the offense with a little bit more rhythm in the passing game can help that group. But I would like to see that potential actually turn into production, because I think if it can, much like your prediction there, if Alabama to win the SEC, I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation if this group comes together.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, I don't see any donations, so I see Johnny down there. He says he's drinking at work. Should the SEC trade Kentucky for Louisville? So I feel bad for him. Let's do Kentucky, Steven. Let's lift this man up. Let's give him something to be happy about. What is the position group that'll make or break Kentucky?
Mike, I hate to be boring here, but I'm going to pick the offensive line. You know me, I'm nerdy about offensive lines, so I just think with, you know, this Kentucky team, and I think about how the backbone of some of those successful teams under Mark Stoops, it was run the ball. It was being strong at the line of scrimmage, the big blue wall. Can they get that group back together with a bunch of transfers and transfers that have played a lot of ball? Seniors, Pete from New Mexico, the Bowling Green transfer at right tackle. These guys have played a lot of ball at smaller levels. How does that translate to the SEC? Because I think if you think that works out, you can run the ball with these running backs. I mean, whether it's Wilcox, Dowdell, Seth McGowan, they have a great group of running backs, and that takes the pressure off of Calzada. Maybe you don't have to keep your defense on the field for as long. So if I'm trying to be the most optimistic person about Kentucky, it's that experience transfers in the offensive line translate to success, which helps that offense get back on track this year.
Yeah, apologies for laughing, Steven. Cousin Paul says, well, maybe we should have skipped Kentucky for him, to be honest. Yeah, it's going to be one of them years down at Lexington. I went with defensive line return, an SEC low, 17% of the defensive line. And, you know, I loved Deion Walker, gone now. Guys like that, you just many of these SEC programs can't simply just replace a guy of that massive talent. I know he was banged up over the years, didn't quite finish his career the way he started it, but I don't think they got anybody on that roster that is near as good as that guy was. So I just think Kentucky's going to struggle to stop the run, which is, you know, that's going to be paramount to their success this season. I do have a lot of faith in Brad White, but again, that my confidence is shaken in this staff because it was Stoops, Brad White, and it was Vince Morrow. They were like the tripod, and someone just then kicked one of the legs out. Now he's a Louisville, and here we are talking bad about him again. You know what?
The vibes are not good, I would say, right now for Kentucky. You know, I look at their early season schedule, and I've mentioned this a couple times. I do think the opener against Toledo is going to be pretty tough. I think Toledo is one of the better teams in the MAC, and if Kentucky is sleeping in week one, they can be threatened. Also, just curious, how many Kentucky fans have followed John Summerall on Twitter in the last couple hours or sent him messages in the last couple hours, perhaps?
Quite a few, if I had to guess. You know what?
Yeah, I would think so. I think John Summerall is going to be getting a lot of calls from the Lexington area code this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen, how about old South Carolina? There's a couple to pick here for Shane Beamer and company. I'm fascinated to see where you go for the Gamecocks.
I'm going defensive line. You're right. I think you could go a couple different ways with this. I think about the early season schedule, though. Virginia Tech, Vanderbilt, Missouri, they all have mobile quarterbacks. John Mateer, you're going to face Garrett Nussmeier, too, in October. Either mobile quarterbacks or really, really good quarterbacks in Garrett Nussmeier. And I think I kind of trust almost like Lenore Sellers to overcome some of these things offensively. South Carolina was sixth in the SEC in conference-only games last year at stopping the run. They've got Dylan Stewart. They also have all new linebackers, and they lost a ton of guys up front. I think Stewart is the only one of the top five by snap counts on the defensive front who is returning this year. It's a line of scrimmage league. How do you protect Dylan Stewart? How do you keep him as active at the line of scrimmage? Those guys got to step up, and that early season schedule gives them some tests. Pavia, potentially Missouri. So I am thinking defensive line here.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Stephen. That's exactly where I went for the Gamecocks as well. And you hit on something very crucial there, is consistency in this conference year in, year out. That's what Georgia's done. That's what Alabama's done. And that's why they've stayed at the top. And there's been so many, including LSU, that can rise to win a national championship, or at Auburn, and then they fall right off a cliff because it's just so hard to keep that consistency. And I know South Carolina may be unfair to throw them into that class, but winning nine games in this conference, that's one hell of a year. Until they do that consistently, you know, they're going to have their doubters, and they need that defensive line replacing three key starters. And long, I think some of those guys were there for about 3 or 4 years in the middle, not to mention the SEC Defensive Player of the Year on one side. You know, that's a lot for any program to replace. That's what the Gamecocks are facing, and that's not to say they're devoid of talent. I think they got the best defensive lineman returning in the conference in Dylan Stewart, but now that everyone can shift focus to him, how will he handle that? I think that's the biggest question I have for the Gamecocks heading into the season. It really is.
It's interesting to think about that dynamic, having the best defensive lineman potentially in the conference, but surrounded by a lot of questions around him. That's going to be interesting to pair up. And also the linebackers, I mean, to lose guys like Demetrius Knight, Bam Martin Scott, Debo Williams, like your whole second level's been cleaned out and you lost your interior. That's why I think early in the season when they play like a Kyron Drones at Virginia Tech, Pavia at Vanderbilt, some of these mobile quarterbacks are going to test the right up the middle and see how how South Carolina's defense is coming along.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, let's shoot for, how about Jane's favorite team? Auburn, come on, Avery's coming to town. And no, we can't pick coaching. So what is the biggest question mark for the Auburn Tigers, you think?
I almost went with kicker here because of the issues they had last year at kicker. You know, they were what, like 12 of 22 on field goals last season. And I know their kicker was dealing with some off the field health issues, but I had to go with an on-field position, Mike. So I went with defensive tackle. And you lose about four key defensive linemen in the rotation from last season at defensive tackle. They were top 30 in the country at stopping the run in success rate. There's some losses at linebacker as well. So kind of like South Carolina, the heart of the middle of their defense has changed. And I like a lot of the pieces that Auburn has with Keldrick Falk, and you've got Crawford potentially coming off the other side. There's some potential there off the edge, but how does the defensive interior form is a question for me.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize. I said biggest question, but we're doing the position group that'll make or break. Now I went a little bit different here, Steven, and again, try to stay with me here, right?
All right.
I'm going 4D chess here. I don't even know how to play chess, but if I did, this is how I do it, Steven. Again, position group that'll make or break. What are we hoping for Auburn this year is to break out, to take that next step, right? And quarterback would be an obvious one. We're not doing quarterback, but to get the quarterback where they need to be, what needs to happen? Where is Auburn on paper the strongest? They're strongest at receiver. So I actually went receiver because there's all this hype and a lot of it is youth, you know, second year players. Some of them really started to come on late in the year. And then we're adding in a transfer from Georgia Tech and Singleton. I mean, on paper, this is an elite group. I think Cole Kubrick the other day had this as a number one receiving group in the SEC, which it may very well be. But to break out and win 8, 9, maybe even 10 games, I think these receivers have got to step up and take over games. I'm looking at winnable games like at Baylor, at Oklahoma, at A&M, who's had issues in the secondary. The receivers can't disappear for any of these games. They have got to show up. They've got to show out. And if they come in here, and no offense to Auburn, but pulling Auburn, and it's just preseason hype, and they don't live up to it, I mean, imagine if the offensive line's strong and the defensive line's strong, and maybe even the quarterback's good, but the receivers don't live up to their end of the bargain. I don't think this is going to be anything special. I think it's on the receivers to kind of carry this team, which they may very well can do. Like I said, Cole Kubrick's got him as the number one receivers in the SEC. If they're that good, they're going to surprise a lot of people this fall. So for me, make or break, it's on the receivers.
I love that call because, first of all, I would agree with Cole, but I have them actually at 2, so I'm not that far behind. I have them as a top 5 receiving core in the country. I think they're pretty loaded. I actually got Alabama at 1 and Auburn 2. But I think, you know, this group has the potential to be one of the best receiving. I mean, I got them, like I said, top 5. They could be the best receiving core in the country outside of Ohio State this year. But if they deliver on that hype and you look at the weapons, whether it's Coleman, Eric Singleton from Georgia Tech could be an all-SEC guy too, Simmons and Perry Thompson take off. I mean, I'm just looking down the road at Auburn's schedule and looking at, man, October 11th against Georgia, the matchup of what Auburn has been able to do at home in these games against Georgia, and could they threaten Georgia if they can get good quarterback play and if the receivers deliver? So I like the idea of a hyped position group actually delivering on its potential. I think that's a good call. The pieces are there, but they have to do it. And if they do, there's a really good chance that this Auburn team is much better than they were last season.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, one team we haven't talked about. How about Georgia, Steven? Not a lot of questions. Well, maybe more than any other year, there are questions. And I know, you know, there's been some debate about the linebacker. Steven, don't say linebacker, otherwise we're going to cut this show completely off.
Oh, I can assure you it's definitely not linebacker. I'm going the other side of the ball and going to go with the offensive line. My favorite position to talk about tonight, I guess. 4 new starters, also 15th in the SEC in rushing offense last year. Just thinking about the big picture here, if Georgia's going to win the national title, and I think there's a pretty good case that if everything comes together, they will be playing for the national title again. But they're going to have to be able to run the ball. You've got to be able to protect Gunnar Stockton. His first year as the starter, I think eventually he's going to get to playing at a high level. But early in the season at Tennessee versus Alabama, you're on the road against Auburn. That's all before playing Ole Miss in Florida to get you to early November. So it just feels like the talent is there in this offensive line. I thought they may have underachieved a little bit at times last year. If trying just thinking, protecting your young quarterback, being able to run the ball, being able to get some good pass protection, this group to me kind of decides whether or not Georgia is potentially playing for the national championship again.
Yeah, I think you absolutely nailed this one, Steven. I'm going offensive line as well. I mean, never in my life that I think that Kirby Smart would be excelling in Athens. And what were they, 15th in the SEC, I think, in rushing last year? I mean, how does that even happen? No, I mean, it happens, I guess, because you got Carson Beck and he was all hyped and we went a little pass happy. And we could sit here and still pick apart and say, well, how's that happen? Well, they won the dang conference, you know? So it's not like they were a complete disaster, but that just seems so atypical of what Kirby wants to be: tough, running the football, defense. So I think we get back to that with Gunnar Stockton. And I think it is the offensive line for every reason you mentioned there. I think they're going to determine it. They are replacing a ton on the defensive line as well. But you just got to have faith in Coach Kirby Smart, Coach Glenn Schumann, to restock on that side of the football and be, you know, dominant as always over there. Which, you know, guys like Jayla Walker come out of nowhere. They're top, 11 pick in the NFL draft. So they probably got about four more of those guys on the roster. We just may not be household names at this point in time.
Oh, absolutely. I think on the defensive side of the ball, you know, someone like Jordan Hall, Christian Miller, of course, is getting some preseason buzz too. So I think Georgia will find the right pieces defensively. There's definitely a lot of turnover and a lot of like a little bit more uncertainty. And I think that's just a case of the portal. You know, guys who might have stayed in the program have either transferred to another program. So the depth probably isn't maybe where it was 2 or 3 years ago, but the frontline talent is still very much there. Did you consider receivers at all for Georgia?
Yeah, but the more people I talk to, Steven, now, of course, this seems to be an annual Georgia tradition where they say the receivers, buddy, look out. But this year, more than ever, it seems like people are on board. They spent heavily in the transfer portal to bring in some guys like a Zachariah Branch, like a Noah Thomas. So, and they still got London Humphreys. You know, they got talent. So I'm pretty confident that the receivers are going to be pretty good.
I am too. I think they will bounce back. Also throw Colby Young coming back to the team too after catching 11 passes early in the season. I think that's a big return for Georgia's receiving core.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about one team we've not hit on, Stephen, where I'm seeing a lot of activity in the chat here? How about Boomer Sooner down there, Oklahoma, with position group that'll make or break the Sooners? I would imagine there's quite a lot to pick from here, Stephen.
There is, but Mike, there's only one in my mind, and that is that offensive line. Here we go again, talking about the play in the trenches. You know, I look back. Pro Football Focus stats, you know, you can read into kind of what you want, but I did find it interesting that they allowed 152 quarterback pressures last season. Some of that was running backs and tight end blocking as well. But, Bill Bedenbaugh is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country, and there was a ton of bad luck last season with injuries and turnover, the move to the SEC. I think as we turn the page to 2025, you would like to think that a year of development plus some depth coming to help from the portal and also on the recruiting trail, that this offensive line will take a big step forward. And also throw in Mateer's ability to make plays when things break down in the pocket, aiding the offensive line. So just with that schedule that Oklahoma faces and the defensive fronts they're going to face, they've got to be much, much better on the offensive line this year.
Yeah, no doubt, Steven. And then, honestly, I almost went with the offensive line, but I knew that's where you were going to go. So I thought I'd be a little bit different and call me nuts. I kind of am. But how about receiver? How about that, Steven, where the receivers was kind of a non-existent for us last year due to injuries mostly. But, you know, we kind of cleaned house. We do got Deion Burks back. I love his potential. I put him in my sleeper category as a Heisman candidate. I mean, I think he's got that potential. You know, it seems like anybody you talk to, they're head over heels with John Mateer, as they probably should be, scoring 40 touchdowns last year. But this offense is not going to work if they don't have the weapons around him. I'm kind of cheating. You could throw tight end in there as well. And if I'm able to throw tight end in there, then I think pass catchers, receivers, that to me is a huge, huge question mark. Equally to your offensive line, it's not going to work without the offensive line as well. But I got to see something from these receivers because I'm pretty confident we got the quarterback. I like what we got at running back. But receiver, I think, is going to be a huge question mark for this offense.
I agree. And I think on paper, this group is in a lot better shape just by getting Deion Burks back, what they've added through the portal. It also goes back to some of our earlier conversation of it's a lot of potential too. Like when you're asking guys to go from lower levels to the SEC and you're also asking them to learn a new system with a first-time quarterback, how does it all fit together? You know, we talked about their early schedule too. Michigan in week two, that's going to be that Michigan's going to have one of the better defenses in the Big Ten. You know, Texas, South Carolina on the road at Tennessee, Alabama. So how the offensive line receiving core develops seems to kind of almost like how good you feel about those two groups sort of tells you how high you should pick Oklahoma, because I think you just trust Brent Venables on defense, but man, they've got to have better luck and better big playability at receiver this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, receiver, I don't want to tip my hand, Steven, but that's one you could go with for Tennessee. How about the Vols for Cousin Shane? What is the position group that'll make or break Tennessee this fall?
Mike, I actually went with receiver for Tennessee. Decided to switch it up from offensive line a little bit. You know? Looking at this group on paper, I think there are reasons to be optimistic. Mike Matthews could step up. Chris Brazel in his second season. Is he better in year two? Last year, maybe some inconsistency. They weren't on the same page as with Nico. Tennessee had 23 drops last season, and now they're losing their top three statistical receivers. Also, Mike, this stat, I don't think it necessarily surprised you if you watched Tennessee the last couple of years, but if you go back to 2022, they had 27 plays of 40-plus yards in the passing game. That went down to 13 in 2023 and 10 last year. So they've been trending down in big plays. And so I think that goes back to you've got Joey Aguilar, you've got a Mike Matthews, you've got a Chris Brazel, Braylon Staley. Which one of these receivers can step up and be the consistent go-to downfield weapon for this team? So I'm going receiver to help the new quarterback.
Well, I was going to say receiver, but just to be different, Steven, I'll say offensive line. Come on. Replacing four starters, bringing in some transfers, but you're going to start a true freshman at right tackle. This is a huge, huge question. And how about this? I believe this is an accurate statistic. Maybe you would know off the top of your head, Steven, but to my knowledge, Tennessee, until now, I think they've only... The number is one or zero Josh Heupel recruits that they have started on the offensive line. I think it may be one, but I mean, that's not great. Again, he's not been there forever, but they've added guys via the portal. They because of super seniors, you know, they've been having guys under Pruitt. Now, I certainly think that Heupel's coaching staff has gotten a heck of a lot more out of these guys than Pruitt's staff ever would have and ever could have and ever did. So it's not a total indictment. But I think the center and obviously the right tackle is a true freshman. They'll be the first, Heupel guys that are coming in here because the left tackle and the two guards are transfers. So it's pretty wild statistic. Again, is that the end all be all? No, I could care less. If you're a high school recruiter, you're a transfer, just get the job done. But, you know, this is going to be a little bit of a proving ground for Heupel and his longtime offensive line coach, Glenn Ellerbe.
It's a great point because I think you're right. I think it's either one or zero that guys they've developed have started now up until this year. So, you know, I think on paper, I think the pieces are pretty solid, like individually for Tennessee, the transfers they brought in, David Sanders, and we'll see if Lance Hurd takes a big step forward. I think what's also kind of interesting in this conversation on Tennessee is, you know, they lose James Pierce. You know, they lose a couple other guys, really not talking about the defense a whole lot. I think that speaks well to the job that Tim Banks and the staff have done, because I kind of come into the season thinking Tennessee is still going to be pretty solid on that side of the ball, despite losing their best lineman and also despite their top cornerback having a torn ACL and still recovering from that. So it really feels like Heupel's side of the ball, the offense, will kind of determine how high Tennessee finishes in the SEC this year.
Guess you haven't heard, Steven. Tennessee doesn't rebuild. They just reload. Yeah. How about that?
I think on the defensive side of the ball, certainly. I would also assume that on the offensive side, too, although we'll test that this year, given the losses on the offensive line, running back, and receiver.
All right, speaking of reloading, how about Arkansas, Steven? Biggest position group that'll make or break the Razorbacks this fall?
Mike, I am going on the defensive line here. Losing Landon Jackson, they were 10th in the SEC in conference-only matchups against the run, generated about 17 sacks. We'll see how Travis Williams can kind of shift this defense around. Maybe they use some three-man fronts to kind of compensate. But I'm just thinking, you know, line of scrimmage league, you and I have talked about that tonight, but also the question marks they had in the secondary last year, and now you're taking away your best lineman. How does this line adapt? And is the secondary going to be any better to kind of offset that? So being a line of scrimmage league, given the schedule, question marks last year, I will take defensive line for Arkansas.
Okay. Yeah, that's not a bad selection at all, Steven. But I'm going receiver, where Arkansas is dead last in the SEC in returning receiver production with just 11% of the receiving yards from last fall returning. And they had Isaac Tesla drafted, I believe, in the third round. And then Andrew Armstrong led, I always get this wrong, I think it was, I think he led the SEC in receiving yards and maybe catches as well. He didn't get drafted, but he should have been. You know, that's a lot of production to replace. Love Taylen Green, like the combo with Bobby Petrino year two. I think that's potential to take off, but your quarterback could look like $1 million if you don't have any good receivers. Receivers not getting separation or can't catch the ball or who knows what, that could really dictate the success or failure of Arkansas this fall. So for me, and of course, again, if I could cheat and throw in tight end, we lost Luke Hawes to Ole Miss. So just a lot of production there to replace for Arkansas. I think the receivers, they've got to come up huge for the Razorbacks.
I like that call. Admittedly, one of the reasons why I didn't pick receiver was I kind of trust Petrino and Taylen Green to kind of figure things out. And I'm also thinking back to the Liberty Bowl where they were missing Armstrong and I think maybe one or two other guys, and they just found a way to get it done offensively. I do worry that if the defensive line is struggling, maybe like we think, there may be like, it may be hard to just simply just outscore teams. So, you know, you got to be able to get a couple stops, get some takeaways. So, I went with defensive line, but I definitely see the concern with the receiver given the turnover and what they've added through the portal.
Mm-hmm. Now we haven't hit on LSU, Steven. What is the position group that'll make or break the Tigers this fall?
I think you could go a couple different ways here. I think there's some spots on defense, but I got to go with offensive line again, Mike. I just, you know, I just looking at this team and seeing Clemson first game of the season on the road. That's going to be a tough spot with Clemson's defensive front in the country, one of the best in the country. Four new starters. You lose Will Campbell, a first round pick. I do think there is some optimism that I've heard that maybe the new offensive line will be better at run blocking at times. So that could be one point of emphasis, is that maybe you get better balance. This group just gels a little different than last year's. So just given the talent that they lose, new faces, early schedule, for me, it's the offensive line.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good pick, Steven. And that is exactly where I went as well. Yeah, I mean, we hear all this hype of Nussmeier and all the weapons they have, but how's that going to come together if they can't block? And I don't know. Quite frankly, Steven, I feel like I'm burned from last year being told how elite this offensive line was, and they never quite lived up to that for me. I mean, not that they were a total liability, but, you know, what did Will Campbell go in the draft, like sixth or something like that? I didn't think was not the sixth best player in college football last year. But again, that's neither here nor there. But how are you going to replace two offensive tackles now in the NFL? I think that's a major, major, major question mark. And I think it'll dictate how far LSU goes. Now they get that resolved, maybe they will have one of the best offenses in the conference. Quite frankly, you know, again, to plug the play caller podcast we did recently, I put Joe Sloan 15th, I believe, in the SEC offensive play caller. So I don't think much of the offensive coordinator either. So, you know, maybe I'm tipping my hand here, but I'd be a little bit surprised if LSU makes the playoff like a lot of people project.
I'm definitely predicting LSU to make the playoff. Now I'm getting a little bit worried after our conversation tonight. But, you know, it is, on one hand, it's weird to lose those top ranked players and four starters and go, there's a chance this group could be, I don't want to say better, but just different. So it's like, if you lose guys off the line that maybe underachieved a little bit, what's the drop off? Like, what's the percentage of drop off you're going to get? That's going to be interesting to see. You know, like I said, they start with Clemson. They've got a good defensive front. We'll find out right away. But I think there should be some optimism on defense. That's kind of why I went with offensive line, protecting your quarterback, finding more balance, and delivering in the big games like Clemson, like Texas A&M, like Alabama. That group, if they hold up, LSU should make the playoff. Yeah.
All right, final one, Steven, that we haven't got to, Vanderbilt. What's the make or break position group for the Commodores?
Mike, I had to go with my favorite one more time. Offensive line, four new starters for the Commodores. But I think most importantly, just keeping Diego Pavia healthy, and a good offensive line allows you to take some pressure off of him in the run game. Also protects him too. We saw this late last year where he was a little bit banged up. The offense wasn't quite firing on all cylinders. So I would like to see the transfers they brought in make an impact right away. I think this offensive line is kind of at the bottom of the SEC in most early power rankings. It's 15th or 16th. Just being able to keep Diego Pavia healthy, get some other stuff going offensively. If Vanderbilt's going to exceed 7 wins, I think it rests on this group.
Yeah, I had to go offensive line as well. In case anybody missed it, I threw up the graphic returning offensive line production. Vanderbilt 15th in the SEC, just 22% of their offensive line snaps are back from last season. So that is a huge area of concern. But fair or not, Steven, I think you know what Vanderbilt does, to call it just a strictly triple option, is probably disrespectful to Tim Beck and you know, the Jerry Kill squad. But, you know, that's kind of what it is. It's a triple option, and I think you can kind of get away with maybe not having the most talented. Now will those pieces fire on all cylinders week one? That's maybe a different question. But I think, if it makes any sense at all, I think the scheme kind of protects those guys. And as long as they can get out and handle their assignments relatively well, I think Diego Pavia and this offense can engineer success. Would you buy into that theory?
Yes, I would. I think that's a good point, because Pavia's mobility can also make up for a lot. Also, I think we've seen, you know, they do a lot of, you know, unbalanced lines and, you know, motion and things. They can, there's a lot of tricks I think they can use now that they've had another full off season to kind of deploy that offense. So I think scheme will help. I think Jerry Kill, Tim Beck, probably two of the, you know, better assistants that Vanderbilt has had in some time, they can figure some things out. And then you ask Pavia to kind of do some things with his mobility, can help you overcome that offensive line question.
Right. So that's kind of where I'm at. We're at Vanderbilt. We got to be sneaky. We're going to run tricks. We're going to misdirection. And then, of course, we got the magician, Diego Pavia, back there, who fourth and inches. What do? They throw it over the top for a 40-yard touchdown on Alabama. You know what? So that's the kind of stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. Gator Jack. I apologize. We missed this one. Gator Jack gave us a $5 donation. Peyton Manning was winless against Florida. Can we keep Arch Manning winless as well? Thoughts on that, Steven? What are the odds? And now he's coming to the Swamp, if I'm not mistaken. So can Florida keep Art? And I guess he's not counting last year's throttling because Arch wasn't the starter. But what are the odds? Zero to 10, zero being no chance, 10. Absolutely. What are the odds Florida upsets Texas October 4th in the Swamp?
On paper, you know, I think Texas will be a decent favorite. I think in terms of like your kind of odds, I would say like maybe like a 5 or 6. And I say that because it feels like, number one, I like Florida to be better this year. I trust the defense is kind of trending in the right direction. But also, when you just look at the Texas schedule, like where is the obvious place that they could slip up outside of Georgia and Ohio State? It's got to be that game against Florida. It's a week before playing Oklahoma in Dallas. And then think back to Florida, the way they closed last season, beating LSU, beating Ole Miss. Like if that Florida shows up, home crowd, maybe Texas is a little bit distracted. Yeah, I could talk myself into it. I think it is very difficult to ask any team in college football now to go undefeated, whether it's regular season, postseason. I would be very surprised. I think every team is going to lose at least once this year.
Do you hear that, folks? I think Stephen forgot Arch Manning was a quarterback at Texas for just a split second. He said no team can go undefeated, not even his beloved Longhorns. But no, that, fair points. And what other one where they could slip? And again, this would be very, very unlikely. No one's going to pick this, but no one picked some of their upsets last year. What about Vanderbilt, Stephen? With their offense playing now, it's in Austin, so it's much, much more difficult. But that's a, you know, again, we're not saying the most likely to beat Texas, but you're saying where could they slip up playing in Gainesville in the Swamp? That certainly, I think, would be my number one upset potential for Texas. But the other one would probably be Vanderbilt. If again, I'm not picking it, but you know, I don't think that's totally unrealistic.
I don't think it is either. I think given the difficulty, like we talked about with the scheme, you know, if Pavia in this offense is a little bit better this year and how I think difficult they are to prepare for. I know that Texas, I think they get Mississippi State and Kentucky before that. So it's not the most grueling of stretches, but you're still looking ahead to Georgia, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. How did Vanderbilt beat Alabama? They played well, but they also probably caught Alabama a little bit off guard too. So yeah, I think so. It's Pavia and that offense is not fun to play if you're a defense like that.
Right. I was talking to someone the other day, Stephen, and they went to the South Carolina game. And I know South Carolina ended up handling them, I think, fairly convincingly. Let's look at the score here. Yeah, it was 28-7. But he said, I was at the game, and it was, I think, in the second quarter. And he said that South Carolina was dominating by, like, close to 200-yard advantage. And the score was like 6-0 because they got two field goals. And yet Vanderbilt, even though they weren't doing anything, they chew up the clock on you because they take it all the way down. They get a first down here. They get a first down there. All of a sudden your offense comes back on the field and they're cold. You know what I mean? So it's all part of the strategy and why that was such a genius move to bring that group in by Clark Lee and everybody. But we could go on and on and on about stuff like that. Steven, before we wrap up, can you tell everybody where to follow you? And again, most importantly, where can they get their Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine?
Mike, the best place to get it is going to be athlonsports.com. At the very top, there's a link to magazines. It takes you to our online store. You can order it. We'll ship it to you. You can also pick it up nationwide. bookstores, grocery stores, newsstands. Sounds like Publix is the best place to get it right now. Appreciate all the cousins who purchased the magazine. If you purchase it, you know, shoot me a message. We'd love to hear from you. And you can follow me on Twitter at @AfflonSteven, Steven L. CFB, Instagram, Facebook, and all my work over at Afflon Sports.
Yeah, help Steven out. Go grab the magazine. I got mine at Publix. So Publix got you covered. Not a sponsor of the show, not yet anyway, but I do love their chicken tender subs. But hey, man, that's going to do it.
You're making me hungry.
Uh-oh, we're going to lose you like we lose Shane every time we bring up the food. But hey, that's all we got on this episode of the show. We appreciate each and every one of you. We'll be back, Cousin Shane and I, tomorrow. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.